Welcome in to the newest edition of the Just in Time Sports Podcast. I am your owner and host, Justin Jackson. In this week's episode, we'll be discussing the NFL, what's happening there as we conclude our preseason. We'll be discussing the WNBA, right in the middle of their playing tonight. And then we will be just have, of course, we'll have our Jack's hot take. Now, as always, don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to the Just in Time Sports Podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Amazon, Pandora, or wherever you get your podcasts. And as always, don't forget to follow the social media handle at JTime Sports. I repeat, at JTime Sports for all of your breaking news, updates, and coverage. Now, as always, don't forget to sit back and get ready to listen.
JTS. Yeah. Just in Time Sports.
Life is good.
Look, this is Just in Time Sports. Come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart, he can never show you fake. If you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight. How we talking basketball without a Jordan Brown debate? If you got the hottest takes, you better come and make your case. If you win a couple games, he might even show you grace. JTS on every platform, we growing adaptation. Numbers going off the charts, we create the separation. Louisiana till I die, it's where I'm from, I can't replace it. So people minds are obtuse, but I like to be adjacent. Giving my opinion like I'm Nick Wright or I'm Jason. ESPN better watch out, cause I'm coming for the spaceship. We even tweeting on Twitter, you can meet us in the spaces. Highlight clips of sports news, yeah, you gotta embrace it. We never had it easy, we just came from the pavement. I might be controversial, but I like to make my statements. This is Just in Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart, he can never show you fake. If you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight. This is Just in Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes. Come and get it. He gon' tell it to you straight, to you straight.
Welcome into the show. I promise you, that theme song never gets old. Again, shout out to my man B-Roy for dropping that track for us for the intro song. It's going to be the intro song for a while. I'm not going to lie to you. We've switched up the songs every couple of seasons or every season or so going into it. That's going to be the intro song for a lovely while, probably until he decides to give me another one. That is going to be the intro song. Shout out to B-Roy for that. You guys go check out his stuff on Apple Music. His name is simple to find. Capital B space, capital R-O-Y, B space Roy. So definitely go check his stuff out on Apple Music. If you're interested in hearing more stuff similar, that's how that's flow. Shout him out. But spoke way too long on him. I've given him almost a minute of my show. Way too much for him. He doesn't deserve it. No, I'm kidding. Again, that's one hell of an intro track. But let's get right into it. We're starting off with the NFL. We're starting off as our preseason concluded last night. My Patriots had the primetime Sunday night football dress rehearsal, truly. We had the full crew with Tirico and Collinsworth. We had the sideline reporters. We had the in-game interviews. It was like Sunday night football's dress rehearsal as they got their one game to kind of get their flow under themselves. Then, of course, everybody's off this week. And then you start playing football next Thursday. Ravens at Chiefs to open the season. But we'll discuss all of that. We have the game in Sao Paulo. I don't know how to pronounce it. In Brazil with the Eagles game. I mean, it's one of those. I mean, this is going to be a situation where we're going to talk about all that next week. But we're going to have, I think it's 6 consecutive days of football. You play Thursday. Then there's a game Friday. I know college. Then Saturday, of course, that's the big college game, but the NFL's playing that day too. Then there's 13 games on Sunday. You're playing Monday, and I think college has a game on Tuesday. I don't know, but there's like 4 or 5 days consecutively of football. And of course, high school ball is back as well. So absolutely huge, absolutely great time. But let's get right into it with the NFL. Let's start off with how kind of the preseason ended. We'll jump into the predictions and all that stuff. We'll jump into that space next week. You know, because of course the show will be recorded on Labor Day, as we're off on Labor Day, of course. Most people are off from their jobs on Labor Day, so this show will be recorded on Labor Day, so you guys will hear it. Might be an instant release show, not sure. We'll have to talk to production. Of course, this show is produced by IMS Productions, so we'll have to talk to them to see what they want to do. Instant release or regular. But again, way too much behind the scenes stuff. So let's get right into the show. We're going to discuss the rookie quarterbacks. A lot of them have gotten their call to start. No surprise on the first two. The top two picks, Caleb Williams, they traded the incumbent starter. Jaden Daniels, they traded the incumbent starter. So both guys who were starting and before those respective teams were traded out of the building, either before the draft or after, but they were gone. Clear skies into starting. Barring those two came out and were absolute abject disasters. And you're like, oh my God, we may have missed the pick. There was no way those two were not going to be the starting quarterbacks of Caleb Williams for the Chicago Bears, Jaden Daniels for the Washington Commanders. Neither one of those things was shocking. And they both have shown you why they were first and second. When it comes to Caleb Williams, the off-script plays, running around, giving his line time, giving creating time, firing, rolling to his left. He's shown you why he was the number one pick, why his improvisation skills was going to be something that people was going to gravitate to, that receivers were going to gravitate to. At no point now is a receiver thinking the play is dead. An edge rusher comes screaming off the edge. Caleb Williams pirouettes and gets out of there. You know, you're still very much alive. And so that's something that receivers are going to enjoy. It's going to give defensive coordinators headaches. I think it's going to frustrate his offensive line coach because now it's like, you know, you teach the O-line basically create that pocket. Well, if Caleb skirts out of the pocket shifted. So now you're kind of just keeping him from a general area. It's going to create a little madness. He's going to run himself into sacks. He's going to run himself out of protections. But at the same time, two times every couple of weeks, once a game, he's going to do one of those rollouts and fire a 30-yard bomb and extend the drive on 3rd and 13 or get a touchdown, and you're going to have to just deal with him running into two sacks because you'll gladly give up two sacks for a touchdown if you can trade that ratio. So that's going to be something he's going to have to develop. I can almost guarantee it. He's going to be one of the slowest five quarterbacks from snap to ball release in the league. Almost every year he's in it because just his improvisation style, his improv style, his wanting to make the play whenever it's available to him. If he can find it, he's going to do his absolute best to make the play. And so I think that's going to hinder his time to get the ball out of his hands, but he's going to have to learn and got to be better at that in order to be a legitimate star in this league, which I believe he will be. I believe he will be one of the top seven or eight guys in the not so distant future. I just think he's going to have to clean some stuff up, one being the scramble improvisation act at all times. He's going to have to figure that out. He's going to get more on timing, more in rhythm, but that is something he definitely is going to have to improve. Now, the second overall pick, Jaden Daniels, is the pinnacle of rhythm. He's actually, I think, under 2 seconds from snap to throw, which is insane. But definitely something that he learned at LSU. If it was a deep shot, it was pre-snap determined. Okay, the deep shot's going to be there. Okay, the look we got is there. And now we're going to take our shot. So it was very determined, very picky, very precise, when and where they were going to take their shots at LSU. I'm a huge LSU fan. I watched every snap of his last year. That was the idea. We're going to pick and choose our spots on our deep shots. And when we do it, even that's going to be in rhythm. It's going to be shotgun, 1, 2, 3, hitch, ball out. I mean, it was like everything was in rhythm, on time. Which is great if you're going to come run a Cliff Kingsbury offense because everything's in the rhythm and it's on time. Yes, it has a lot of the air raid concepts in it. Yes, it has a lot of probably the terminology of the air raid. Yes, it looks like the air raid to the naked eye. However, it has a lot of power running concepts. And on top of that, it's very, very, very timing based. One hitch is rare. Two hitches is a no-go. Something's going left. It's very okay. You're in pistol, five step drop, back foot hits, ball out. All right, you're in pistol, five, three step drop, back foot. You know what I'm saying? It's three step drop, hitch, deep shot. Like, it's a very similar timing system to what he ran. Jaden Daniels ran at LSU, which you're going to see a lot with Cliff Kingsbury, and there is in the Washington Commanders. Sorry, I'm going to say Arizona Cardinals. With the Washington Commanders, you're going to see that. But again, there was no QB competition at all in Washington. Everybody knew from the time Daniels was drafted, he was a starter. I do commend Dan Quinn and that coaching staff for, if it was a done deal and everybody knew it was a done deal, you still made Daniels at least work for it. Because he spoke about that in the interview against the Patriots. He said that he was happy that he had to work for it. He knew nothing's going to be given to him, basically, in this life. And so he definitely, if nothing else, you tricked him or you got him to play along with the fact that he had to earn his starting position. So that was huge for Daniels. We'll talk about the Patriots mentality in a second, but that was huge for Daniels, where they, you know, he stated, like, you have to earn it, you know, and that was huge. But again, no question he's going to start. I mean, from the first drive, he, I think, gets sacked or something, or has a completion. Anyway, they're like behind the chains, and then float touchdown. They get a little bit further up, read option, walk in the end zone, touchdown. I mean, it was militaristic, and from that point, you kind of just understood it's his job, barring something absolutely unforeseen and truly catastrophic. But let's shift to my favorite team. Let's talk about the New England Patriots and their quarterback situation. Of course, three quarterbacks went 1-2-3. We've spoken about number one and Caleb Williams. We've spoken about number two and Jaden Daniels. Let's discuss number three overall pick, Drake May. Now, for the listeners of this podcast, you know I was anti-Drake May. And it wasn't anti-Drake May in terms of I thought he was bad. Truly, I don't recall ever saying he was a bust. If I did, somebody please clip it and send it to me. I don't recall ever saying he was a bust. However, I do recall saying I would have rather Jaden Daniels, which that's still the case. However, the more I've watched Drake May and the more that I've seen of Drake May, the more that I've studied of Drake May and seen him in the NFL level, whoever the quarterback coach is in New England, Alex Van Pelt, the OC, but I don't know who the QB coach is off the top of my head. Congratulations, you've done a hell of a job with this kid so far. Well, the one thing I had a problem with, and I wondered if he would struggle coming into the league, was his footwork. Terms of making his feet connect to his top. And that was one of the problems in a more vastly bigger issue that Tim Tebow had in college. His feet and his in the NFL, his feet and his top never connected. His footwork was always sloppy. His top never looked great. It was weird. So in the NFL, it was bad. And so Drake May in college, his upper body looked great. One of the bigger arms in the draft. He's probably the second or third biggest arm in the draft class in terms of his raw throwing power. And he's, you know, behind his teammate and Joe Milton, Caleb Williams being up there as well. But, you know, his feet just looked rough. And it was, I didn't like the feet. It looked rough. And I had a lot of concerns. I'm like, it may take him, you know, 8 games. You know, we're talking about maybe an entire rookie season to fix his feet, especially if we go to a true West Coast system that's all about footwork and timing. This kid got some of the worst feet I've seen from a top prospect ever. And they have almost completely erased that. It's rare I see it. There was moments, just using last night as an example, and I'm recording this Monday night, so I'm talking about Sunday night game. Yeah, an example. It was rare moments that I would see the old, I'm going to call him UNC May, in terms of the feet. Now, it was one time he ran out to his right. It did like a little jump pass flick thing. It's actually a pretty accurate pass. It's a hospital ball in a real game. It's a shot where the receiver is picking his teeth off the ground. But, you know, definitely one of those moments like, ugh. I even had a friend of mine, actually, Jai, who you see a lot on the video show. He texts me. We're both huge Patriots fans. And he's like, That's a UNC May moment. And so when he's in the pocket, he's cool, calm, and collected. He's not rattled by much. But when he's off his spot, he can go into UNC May. And that's what's going to have to be coached out of him, worked out of him over the next, 17 games. I don't think we're a playoff team. So over the next 17 games, they're going to have to work that out. But from what I've seen, and everyone else has seen, Drake May has outplayed Jacoby Brissett. To the tune of head coach Gerard Mayo stated as much, that Drake May has outplayed Jacoby Brissett. But there's a lot of extenuating factors into whether Drake May starts. Couple of those extenuating. Well, for one, before I go too far into that, for one, Gerard Mayo has a great policy in regards to who plays. And I think that comes from being a former player. You hear and you see it, the guy who makes, I talk about it all the time. I'll just give an example. I talk about it all the time with Derek Carr. I know a lot of Saints fans, I'm family with a lot of Saints fans. They want to get rid of Derek Carr. And my response is there's 80 or 90 million guaranteed reasons why he's not going anywhere. Spencer Rattler may be better. We'll talk about Spencer. Is he my rundown? No, Spencer Rattler has outplayed Derek Carr in his preseason. Spencer Rattler, right this second, may be better than Derek Carr. However, there's 80 to 90 million guaranteed reasons why the starter will be Derek Carr for this season. Possibly next. It is what it is, right? But Mayo spoke to his team, spoke to his organization, spoke to somebody, and was like, hey, we've all been on those teams, speaking of pro athletes, where the guy starting or the guy playing has a big contract. He has name recognition. He has draft position, but he's not the best player at the position. But he's playing. And he was, he said, all the guys nodded. Like, yeah. He said, that's not going to happen here. The best guys play. And I'm a big proponent of that, too. Like, speaking of me personally, on the high school level, I'm starting a freshman. And he don't have the name recognition or the experience of another guy, but he's a better football player. He's starting. And so that is, I love that. I love that mentality in New England. The best 11 will start and play. Period. Does not matter who's making the most money. It does not matter who's making, the draft position or the name recognition. If you're not the best guy at your position, you simply won't play. Okay. I've said it. I've acknowledged it. I've gotten it out the way. So there are extenuating circumstances into the starting timeline of Drake May. Now, again, we've already discussed Gerard Mayo has already said that May has been outplaying Brissett. So based on the mantra and the mindset that Gerard Mayo himself said and set, Drake May should be starting. If the best 11 guys are to play or to start, whatever, and draft position, finances, whatever, does not matter, Drake May is the starter in New England day one. Okay? But if you go through the extenuating circumstances, I understand the point to an extent. Okay? So, one, if the plan is, hey, the plan was always play Jacoby Brissett 6 weeks, bring May in for week 7, blase, blase, blase. It's show the rest of his New England career. Cool. Great. If you're looking for team improvement in order to bring May in, that's a dangerous, slippery slope. The reason why is you basically will rule out his rookie year. Because barring something historic, the Patriots are not going to get that much better on the offensive line. They won't do it through development, and there's no way you acquire that level of offensive lineman, and you need two. And there's no way you acquire that level of O-lineman. So as I say, and you need two of them. So that's incredibly unlikely, right? And it's just, you know, when you start going down the path of, the O-line's not ready. Okay, so let's say you draft. I've seen this on Twitter. Which I remember the guy's name. But let's say you get the opportunity and you draft Will Campbell. He doesn't fix the line still. Do you sit Drake May out another year? No, of course not. So that is an illogical plan. It was one of those super extreme plans that it's so outrageous in the answer that you kind of pay attention to the start process. So again, he's basically saying, what's going to be the point where you believe right now Drake May should play? Is it a fixed offensive line? That may never come. Ask Joe Burrow. So if the O-line is the issue, he's going to have to deal with O-line issues probably most of his career. Let's throw him in there. Like, you know what I'm saying? Let's not hold him back because his offensive line isn't perfect. Me personally, I think he should go from day one. I think he should join Williams and Daniels and Bo Nix out in Denver and just go day one. What's the harm? If he's already out playing Brissett, now it's against vanilla defenses, a lot of two high man, a lot of cover three, a lot of cover two. It's not a whole lot of complex stuff. However, right? If he's out playing Brissett against said vanilla stuff, who's seen said vanilla stuff way more than Drake May, start Drake May. It ain't hard. Now I can understand why you wouldn't, because you wouldn't want to throw him in a pack of wolves, and you know you don't want to break his confidence. Mac Jones is on the mind of a lot of people in New England, and how well it started and how poor it ended, and the steps in between. So the development of the development of Drake May is partially being done in fear of making another Mac Jones. So I hope that New England doesn't operate in that fear too long, and they are able to start, or they allow themselves to start Drake May. CD Lamb gets his contract done. He becomes the second highest paid receiver as he goes for 4 years, $136 million. That includes $100 million guaranteed and another $38 million in signing bonus, which is the largest signing bonus in NFL history for a receiver. Congratulations to CeeDee Lamb, man. He had to sit there and just kind of take it on the chin, kind of deal with it. That is absolutely, you know, congratulations to him. Congrats to him. Now, you get issues at times in terms of holdouts with Jerry Jones, but Jerry always takes care of himself. Again, CeeDee Lamb becomes the second highest paid receiver ever. He becomes the second highest paid non-QB ever. He comes in $1 million under Justin Jefferson. So Justin Jefferson went 4 years, 140. CeeDee Lamb comes in 4 years, 136. Huge, huge shout out to CeeDee Lamb. Again, he's earned it. Shout out to Jerry for continuing to take care of his own. He picks them. They develop. He pays them. That is the strategy from the Jones camp. Malik Willis, cute quarterback for Tennessee, starting spot duty, has been traded to the Green Bay Packers for a 2025 seventh round pick as the backup to Jordan Love. Juju Smith-Schuster, after being released from the New England Patriots, is heading back to Kansas City Chiefs. So that is where he will be. Nick Chubb was not activated from the physically unable to perform list, which means he will be out at least the first four games of the season. However, if the Browns do get Jedrick Willis back, among several others, to help bolster their offensive line. And then some quick updates revolving contracts. Brandon Ayuk and Ja'Marr Chase now look at the CeeDee Lamb deal as another barometer. So it wasn't like the DeAndre Hopkins deal where D-Hop got paid so far out in front of the market. Or is that Davante Adams? One of the two got paid so far out in front of the market that every other GM went, throw that deal out. We're going to focus on here. But because Jets went up and then CeeDee came right under him, that means that you can chase and now have those contracts to go off, because that is clearly the standard for the level of receiver both believe that they are. And two disgruntled employees that does not seem like a resolution anytime soon. Trent Williams is still holding out of camp, and I truly don't believe he's any closer than getting a new deal done, because simultaneously they are dealing with the Brandon Ayuk situation. And then Hassan Reddick, newly traded Hassan Reddick to the New York Jets, has been requested to be removed from the New York Jets as he is unable to reach a contract extension to his liking and will now look to move on elsewhere. But up next, we're going to discuss the WNBA and talk about what's going down there. Welcome back to the show. And now we are going to discuss the WNBA as we are gearing up, like I said, roaring towards the WNBA playoffs. It's going to be one of the most exciting WNBA playoffs we've ever had. This kind of reminds me at the excitement level of when the W switched their format that one year or those couple of years where they went to the first round was like single elimination. So it was like, oh man, like getting that double bye was huge. So like people push all through the regular season, try and secure that double bye. I remember Candace Parker throwing a fit about how, like, she was like, we're the better team. We've been the better team all year. And then we lose one game to them and we're out, which I thought was fair. And especially because, you know, looking back on it, that was one of her last great years. And she did it 2 years in a row, actually, lost like super early to a team they would have handled in a series because it was one game. The team came out, hit 10, 15 threes, and now, you know, you're staring up at a team you have no business being down to. And so I get it. But this year, it's a traditional 3, I think it's 3-3-5-5, I want to say, or 3-5-5, whatever the playoffs is. But it is back to the standard WNBA playoffs. I could not be more excited about this. The 8 seed situation, I think it's 3-5-5, I want to say. I don't know. But whatever. No, it is back to the traditional playoffs. I'm excited about that. Let's go through the standings really quickly before I get too far down this rabbit hole. Leading the pack, entering right now. So it's 10:09 p.m. local time. So these standings or these numbers may shift a little bit by the time this game is, by the time this recording is done, because there is a couple of games that is still being played. But as of right now, New York is number one. Connecticut is 2.5 games back and number two. Minnesota is a half game back from them. And number three, Seattle is 3 games back from them. And number four, Vegas is a half game back from them. And number five, Phoenix is 9 games back from them. And number six, Indiana is 2 games back from them. And number seven, Chicago is 2.5 games back from them. And number eight, Atlanta is, Chicago's holding the last playoff spot. Currently, as it sits, injuries, Camila Cardoza and that crew, Kennedy Carter, Teresa Witherspoon's crew is in the playoffs. Atlanta is 1 game back from Chicago at 8. Washington is 3 games back from Chicago at 10. Atlanta is 4 games back from Chicago at 11. And the Sparks round out the bottom of the league. They are 5.5 games back despite Rekia Jackson's absolute tear at 12. So just going through some stuff that's happening right now in the league. Like I said, it's going to be a super long WNBA segment. I'm kind of middle of the game, so kind of throwing me off a little bit. But Caitlin Clark had another good game and she had 19 points tonight. However, there is a problem in her game. And okay. I slander Caitlin Clark a lot. Mostly due, and I say mostly due to the fact that I am an Angel Reese person, number one. But in perfect honesty with you, on a complete and total non-hating thing, I just want to be the other side of the coin. Like, it's the Caitlin Clark praise fest for 95%, it feels like, of national media. So I just want to be on the other side a little bit. And I talk about her turnovers, I talk about her inefficiency, and I talk about her bad shot she'll take, or, you know, you can always tell when she's about to shoot a shot because it feels like a rhythm shot. Like, I kind of always, I throw little digs and stabs at her. But she does have a problem in her game. She has moments of timidity that I don't recall seeing, definitely not a lot, but if at all, at Iowa, where there's this timid game. And she had a good game. She had 19 points, 7 rebounds, 7 assists. She only had 2 turnovers. She was plus 3 in the box, in the plus minus. She was 4 of 9 from the 3-point line and 6 of 14 from the field. So it's not a situation where she played a bad game by any means. 19-7-7, like, that's good to go, right? Especially on the 2 turnovers. She has this, like I said, this, I don't know if it's late game bugs, I don't know if it's timidity, I don't know if it's Kobe Bryant Memorial, y'all want me to pass to them, okay, I'm gonna pass to them and y'all see how it goes. Like, I don't know what it is, but she has these games, and it's like her third or fourth game, maybe more this season, where she just won't shoot for, if not all, a vast majority of the fourth quarter in a tight game. She won't shoot. She'll turn down looks. She won't drive to the goal. Like I said, she'll just become very, very timid, very, very passive, to the point where, like I said, I wonder if there's like an ulterior motive where she's trying to show that certain players shouldn't be with her, or she is, you know, saying, trying to show people that, you know, she really is a lot more important. Like, I don't know what it is. Or maybe she just gets nervous and, you know, she gets a little scared, gets a little worried, or gets in her head about making the perfect pass, being as though she is the team's point guard, you know, trying to make the perfect pass as opposed to making the correct pass, as opposed to just taking the open shot when it comes to you. I'm not going to say correct basketball play, but opposed to taking the open shot when it comes to you. So that is definitely something that is going to have to be corrected if you are Caitlin Clark, if you want this Indiana Fever team to go as far as me, myself, and many people believe they can, especially in the not-so-distant future, referring to the next couple of years. She's going to have to be aggressive at all times. She's going to have to shoot the ball at all times. She's going to have to be able to come downhill and get to her spot, again, at all times. Because if you go to timid mode, and the defense picks up on it, now you're single guarded and not really guarded from long distance. Now it's like a regular offense and you're just another cog in the wheel. Her specialty is, I'm aggressive and I'm long distance aggressive. So you're going to have to bring any kind of zone way out here. You're going to have to bring any kind of man defense way out here. And that's when backdoor cuts, et cetera, start to come. So she's going to definitely have to improve that over the next couple of years. I don't think it's a thing she can fix this season, because if it looks natural, because she does it every so often, but I definitely want her to fix that over the next few months, especially. I don't think she's going overseas, so definitely fix that over the next few months. Gabby Williams, everyone's favorite French women's basketball player, even though she's American and ran track and field for the Americas a few years ago, she's everyone's favorite French basketball player. I remember after the game, a lot of people were asking on Twitter and on the regular social medias, why isn't Gabby Douglas in WNBA? Why isn't Gabby Douglas in WNBA? Not Gabby Douglas, Gabby Williams, I'm so sorry. Why isn't Gabby Williams in the WNBA? Why isn't Gabby Williams in WNBA? And this happened, and Gabby Williams had came out right before that, and they asked her, why aren't you in? And she was basically saying the WNBA changed a lot of the rules. So for one, the WNBA doesn't pay the most. It is not the most profitable league, and it does not pay the most as other female leagues. Now, why it is widely considered, and it is very truthful, that the W is the best league, it is not the highest paying league. So, and the W created this thing called a prioritization rule. This rule states that all players must have reported to their team by May 1st. Now, this is the problem, because no international season ends that early. So you have several, you have a lot of American players deciding, okay, I'm not going to go overseas because then I couldn't play in the W. But some of those players who, you know, may not be all that married to the W are staying with their overseas clubs. Gabby Williams was a casualty in that. She was saying that due to that rule, she couldn't sign a full-fledged contract with someone and then show up after the EuroLeague or whatever, you know, league season it is because she has to be in training camp May 1st. Like I said, and that's just impossible with an overseas schedule. So after the Olympics, she was everyone's darling. Why isn't Gabby Williams in the WNBA? Why is he in the WNBA? And a lot of these questions started getting asked. A lot of these rules started getting challenged. And then now she is in. She's in for the Seattle Storm, which is a great pickup by the Storm. I mean, NECA, Guma K, Jewel Lloyd, Skylar Diggins, and now Gabby Williams, amongst others. Huge, huge win as far as the free agent marking for the Seattle Storm. Huge, 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 huge move for them to get a player like Gabby Williams. She can, if she can acclimate herself to the W quickly, you're looking at an incredibly dangerous team in the Seattle Storm. Arike Ogunbowale, everyone's favorite scorer, is continuing on her hot streak. She dropped 33 points in a win last game. Huge, huge numbers. She's the best player scorer in the WNBA. I mean, it's just plain and simple. You can ask or put up who you want to put up. In the currency of the WNBA, she is the best pure scorer. And I'm so excited she gets to put that on full display whenever the team goes home. And then lastly, there was another one of those time capsule, where were you kind of level battles between Angel Reese and Asia Wilson. Both players were awfully inefficient. For Angel Reese, it's fairly expected these days. But for Asia Wilson, that was bad. I mean, Camila Cardoza blocked her shot 5 times. I believe she was 8-for-28 at the end of the game. No, but that was a game that came down to absolute craziness. And Angel Reese, before I go to dive too far into the game, she became the first player in WNBA history to get 20 rebounds in 3 consecutive games. That level of physical work, that level of burden, that level of effort, although some of them coming off her own misses, is incredibly impressive and something that has not been done. Ben Wallace, actually, I believe, was the person, and then Wilt Chamberlain before him. So, you know, it is insane what Angel Reese has been able to do. And then Camila Cardoza blocked Asia Wilson 5 times in the same game, which set the personal record for Asia Wilson as far as most times blocked by a singular person in a game. So shout out Camila Cardoza for her effort around the rim. Oh, but we're going to fast forward through the game, and we get to the last, 6 seconds, and the Sky get the ball in bounds. They run an action. Kennedy Carter pops out the top. She's not by herself. She'll shoot over someone, and she drills it with 1.1 second left. I mean, if you're at Wintrust Arena in Chicago, your brain has to be thinking, we're going to overtime. And the perfect, I do mean the perfect inbound pass comes from Chelsea Gray right into the hands of Asia Wilson, who goes right up and drills the game winner as time expires to break the hearts of the Chicago Sky fan. I mean, Kennedy Carter hit a crazy shot and the crowd's going crazy. And like I said, 1.1 second, everyone in the building has to think we're going to OT. And then Asia Wilson wins it in regulation. Definitely one of those heartbreaks. But up next, we're going to shift to Jack's Hot Take, which is going to be a discussion on college football returning. Welcome back into the show, and what an appropriate return as a welcome back to college football. My God, you were missed. You were missed. You were missed so much. Florida State and Georgia Tech got us kicked off. They were over in Ireland. They were the kickoff game, the third year in a row where the Ireland game. Oh, I sounded Irish there. Where the Ireland game is the kickoff game. So it is the game that starts the season every year. And so it was Florida State and Georgia Tech. A lot of stuff happening. I was live tweeting / Facebooking / social mediaing during the game. It started off offensive, and then it got real defensive towards the end. Very physical game up front, very tough game up front. One of those games where you had to bring your hard hat and your lunch pail and go to work. DJ Uyagalele was Uyagalele, however you want to pronounce it, was the source of many social media scrutiny as ESPN showed a stat of him at halftime where he was like 12 or 14, but his average yards, his average air yards per attempt was -0.1. Basically, they were not throwing the ball past the line of scrimmage. It was sideways. It was low bubbles. It was screens. It was anything they could do to get a quick, easy pass. And if it went down the field, it was missed the first couple of drives. Now, first couple of quarters. Now, in that fourth quarter, he put together a drive. Man, 2 fourth down conversions all through the air. I mean, it was looks like, oh, no, that's the DJ Uyagalele that many people thought when he came out, he was the number one quarterback in his class. Like, people thought he was going to be the next guy at Clemson. It was going to go with Deshaun Watson. It was going to go EJ Manuel. Oh, I cannot think of the guy before Deshaun Watson. Oh, no, Deshaun Watson to Trevor Lawrence to DJ Uyagalele to Cade Klubnik. It was like back to back to back to back. It was going to be lined up. And then DJU was just not the guy. And similar, you know, he'd be teams he'd run over. He's 6'5", 6'4", 250, 60 pounds. He'd run them over and touchdown. And, you know, he was the man. But then when they played your Florida States, you know, when they played your Georgias, when he played these top programs, he folded like a tent at the end of the night. And a lot of it was due to lack of ability of throwing the football. That was a big struggle for him. And it continued to be so throughout his career, especially down the field. So, but when you get to Florida State and they're retooling. I won't say Florida State's rebuilding, but they're retooling. You run up against a Georgia Tech team that's going to be a little better than a lot of people think. That's an 8.5 win team. If it was an over under, I said it at 8.5 for them. That's an 8.5 win team. They're going to be really good. They're going to lose to Georgia. They're going to lose to going to beat Florida State. They're going to lose to Georgia for sure. Everybody else in the ACC, Georgia Tech can play with. So that's an 8.5-9 win team. Over there in Georgia Tech, over there in Atlanta. There's a good product in Atlanta now. They got a great defensive coordinator. He's going to be a head coach sooner rather than later. Good head coach. Those guys believe in. They believe in each other. They're starting to invest into the program. They're starting to put money in the NIL. So they're going to be really, really good for the foreseeable future. I mean, they're, like I said, 8.5-9 win program. 8.5-9 wins, pushing the Chick-fil-A Bowl every year, which puts a lot of money into the general scholarship fund for a school, and people are happy, right? So that's what they ran into, Georgia Tech. Haynes King's going to lose them a couple games due to his inability to throw the ball, but they're a very physical team. They push through Florida State every time they had to. So not necessarily every time they wanted to, but every time it was 3rd and 3, Georgia Tech's gonna line up and run the ball, they get 4. You know, it's 3rd and 6, we're gonna run inside zone and get 8. You know, like every time, whatever they needed, they got every single time. They needed it. So huge shout out to Georgia Tech. Their head coach is a former offensive line coach, so he responded with run the ball in the postgame presser. It was great to see for Georgia Tech, and effectively a road game. It was in Ireland, yes, but Florida State had a lot of fans in Ireland supporting them. Florida State came in with all the pressure. Like I said, they were the number 10 team in the country. Interesting how far they fall. I'd probably say 17-18. They did not look good, really, on either side of the ball. Georgia Tech had a lot of shot themselves in the foot a few times, or that game may have gotten worse. But Florida State, Mike Norvell and that crew, to me, you gotta just let DJ throw the ball down the field. Because when he did it in the fourth quarter, when he had to put a drive together, multiple fourth down conversions, and etc., he scored a touchdown. So I would just line up and throw the ball and kind of live with the results. That offensive line was not nearly as intimidating as I thought they'd be. They just weren't where you thought they would be to start the season. But it's also the kind of the casualty where college players don't have joint practices. They don't have preseason. They don't have preseason games. When they put on helmet and shoulder pads and go truly live, QB included for the first time, it is week one or week zero in that case. So definitely interesting to see how far Florida State falls. I would assume somewhere around 16-15, but we'll see how far they plummet. But this week, it is week one. The slate is laid. Welcome into the college football season officially for the first time. Like I said, the slate is laid for week one. Of course, you open the season really and truly. I mean, Thursday kind of kicks it off. Like Missouri playing Murray State. NC State's playing Western Carolina. Nobody cares about that. However, Deion Sanders enters year two as Colorado head coach. He'll be on ESPN, primetime ESPN. He'll be on against North Dakota State in Boulder. So that's one of those situations where it could go really, really well for them, really, really bad. North, the Bison are always tough. They've pumped out NFL quarterbacks as of late. And so if that's a game where it's 17-14 at the half, 20-17 at the half, 14-10 at half, you know, even if Colorado's winning, that's a game where North Dakota, they can go and lock them and go, guys, we're right there. It's much hype and hoopla and whatever with this team. We're right there. We're playing with them. So that's a game that you want to get rid of North Dakota State early. Going into Friday, Oklahoma will play Temple at 6. That should be an easy Oklahoma win. It's Oklahoma's first game in the SEC. A lot of the big dogs aren't playing anybody of note. However, there's a few ranked matchups that matter. Georgia plays Clemson in the Aflac kickoff Saturday at 11 a.m. Followed in the next window. Oh, man, I know. Because it was three ranked games they were saying was going to be the Sugar Honey Iced Tea. In this week, I can't see it now, but then the night game is Notre Dame Texas A&M. That's huge. Sunday night, USC versus LSU, and the Modelo Vegas kickoff classic, and then Florida State gets a chance at redemption on Monday Night Football against Boston College. So they'll get another primetime game. They'll get a chance at redemption. But kudos to college football for returning. You were missed. You were blatantly, completely missed. Just going to go to a hot take. My national champion, I legitimately believe this. I'm not kidding. I think LSU gets it done. And part of it's fandom. Most of it's fandom. I think LSU gets it done. I don't trust Georgia. Bama's going to have to go through a period of learning with Kalen DeBoer. I think Georgia gets caught by somebody, maybe in a couple people. I think if LSU gets out of the SEC, they're going to win the Natty. But even then, Georgia probably waiting in the playoff. Georgia's probably the best team in the country. I'm just looking at if LSU had an average defense last season, they win the championship. So if new defensive coordinator Blake Baker can have them be the 50th ranked defense, 40th ranked defense, the offense is going to be top five in the country. They have a chance to win the title. So that's kind of what I'm looking at there. My Heisman winner, I think if LSU wins a Natty, Garrett Nussmeier is probably winning the Heisman. But my dark horse Heisman guy, I think it's Cam Ward. And I think it's Cam Ward in Miami. I think Miami could be sneaky 9-3, 10-2. If that's the case, Cam Ward's gonna have a hell of a case of the Heisman. But that is all I have for you guys today. I want to thank you guys for joining with me on this Tuesday. I hope you guys have a great rest of your day. As always, this is your host, Justin Jackson, signing out.